Good morning to everyone, and we will begin with introductions from the court. I'm Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice, and now by order of seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman.
Good morning, William Castle.
Stephanie Stacy. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik, good morning.
And John Freinember.
Thank you, members of the court. We appreciate your wearing masks when you are not presenting to the court, counsel, but when you are presenting to the court, please take your mask off so that we can see and hear what you have to say. With that, we will go to the first case of the day, which is State versus Hoffman. And Mr. Island, good morning to you. Before we begin, do either counsel have any questions? Mr. Island, you may approach and you may proceed.
The criminal law is designed to give people fair notice of the conduct which they will be punished for. That's set out right away in chapter 28.102. And that's kind of what I think this issue of this case boils down to, is when you look at the statute, when you look at what is a false information, you have to look at those statutes in conjunction and together. Under 69.24.08, it says that if you provide false information without an application, that's the crime. But it says, and it directs you then to 69-2404. And at that point, now it's telling you that you need name, date of birth, residence, and country of citizenship. I inadvertently use residence, citizenship interchangeably. I shouldn't have done that. And those are the things that are important. And it's clear then you go to 69, I believe it's 2409.01, where it tells you what the state patrol needs to run a background check. It's just name and date of birth. And in fact, in this case, in this instance, it's clear that when they had her name and date of birth, they didn't rely upon any information in the application outside of that to determine that she had a criminal complaint on file in Clay County versus, and that's a different issue, I think, of whether or not it's an information or an indictment. But that's how they found out that she would be a person that's prohibited.
Can the state ask for information beyond what it's statutorily required to ask for?
I think they can ask for it, but then it becomes a different offense. If there's some type of false information, maybe that would be the misdemeanor version. Because right now the statute is really saying, we don't want people that are prohibited from possessing firearms, right? And so the way we do that is name and date of birth. That's all we need. And that's what the state, the next section that talks about what the state patrol needs is, you're only required to take that which is necessary to make that determination. That's name and date of birth. The country of citizenship and the address, that's important to know because obviously it's in the county. And that's what happened in this case is Hoffman moved from Clay County to Scotts Bluff County, went in to renew her permit since she was in a new county, and that's how this all came to light. So
statute number 69-2404, you agree though that does not set forth an exhaustive list?
I say it is an exhaustive list of what can be criminalized under 2408. That what I'm saying is that says this is the information that's required in the application. And I'm saying it's limited to those things that become the felony offense of providing false information on a firearm permit. And once again, you got to read it in conjunction with what the state patrol requires to run the background check, and for the purpose of what the statute is aimed at is to make sure that those that are not allowed to possess firearms don't possess firearms. And that's all they need is name and date of birth.
Is the word include customarily used to denote an exclusive list or a partial list?
Include, I don't know if that's a good term. I hadn't really thought of that issue. I think include, because we're really only worried about finding out those people are prohibited, they're saying these are the four things that you need to include on this so you can find that information out. And that's why I think that's important, because that's all that's necessary And like I said, I go down to the part with the state patrol has to have.
In our previous cases, have we construed include as being exclusive?
I don't remember seeing that. It's an issue that I would have to get back to and submit a supplemental brief. I apologize. And so that's why I think that in and of itself creates a problem, because what you're trying to, what's happening is we're creating a trap for the unsophisticated or people that are unsure. And that's what happened in this incident. Ms. Hoffman.
Mr. Island, yeah. Actual question, is this a uniform form used throughout the state, or is this unique to Scottsbluff County?
That I don't know, because I've only seen the ones in Scottsbluff County. I know it talks about it has to be approved. So I would assume it's a similar form from county to county, but I have not surveyed that, and I don't know that for certain. But that being said, once again, if the purpose of the statute is to keep those that are prohibited from possessing firearms, we don't need this additional list, and we don't create this trap for people that are uncertain or unaware. In this case, particularly, we have indictment and information, which is the question where things turn on. And
but this goes to your second argument, right?
That is true.
The trap for the unaware. So as to the question about indictment or information, there's the question on the form, and then there's the parenthetical statement about an information is a formal accusation of a crime by a prosecutor. An indictment is from a grand jury.
Correct.
Is that a definition? What do you understand that parenthetical to be doing?
I think it's trying to help people understand, and probably what they should say is there a pending felony charge? That would be more beneficial, because honestly, until I started practicing law, I didn't understand the term indictment and information. The parenthetical, I think, is the definition they're using, the indictment, which, but we also have a statute in 29, I believe it's 109, that says use its common everyday term. Indictment is for a grand jury, and very rarely would we see a grand jury indictment in our state. So it's information, and in Nebraska, information doesn't exist until after there's a bind over.
But if the statement in the parenthetical is a definition, then you lose, right? Because at the time that this answer was provided, your client was under a formal accusation of a crime by a prosecutor.
But an indictment, that ordinary term means from a grand jury. I mean, that's just trying
sure,
to
but it's but it says an information is a formal accusation of a crime by a prosecutor. And I understand under Nebraska law, it has a different understanding, but if that statement in the parenthetical is a definition.
I don't think it's the end all definition. I think it's a suggestion or helping you use terms. And when you're using terms like indictment or information, then we look to its common ordinary usage under 29, and I believe it's 109. Yes, correct, 109. And so then we look at what indictment means, and under the definition, indictment is a grand jury. Information in Nebraska is only after a bindover. We have a complaint that's pending, and clearly, if that complaint is pending, that's not an information. And so if we're using the ordinary term, that means that's not an information. That fact
I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller-Lerman with a question. Does the expression or any other crime and so forth, punishable by 1 year, does that inform the meaning of the statute?
It probably helps, but then using the term indictment and information, I think limits how they're looking at that. Because once again, the idea of a complaint is to see whether or not there is even any reason for the case to continue and exist. And well, it's common for a case to be bound over after a preliminary hearing to an information. It's not absolute. And is the question then becoming, do we want, well, that person is prohibited under statute, they can find that out. That's a different term complaint, because it's not an information. Information requires that probable cause determination, which is, I think, the Carrera case itself, even a direct filing, it's not an information. I'll reserve any remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Klein, good morning to you.
May it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice. I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state in this matter. Your Honor, with respect to what information can be asked on the permit and what is actually, what information actually constitutes a violation. I think it's clear that the statute as it provides, it says the application shall include name, address, date of birth, and country of citizenship. Nowhere does it indicate that that is an exclusive list. That is simply basically the baseline minimum, what has to be on the form. And there is nothing that limits the other information that can be asked on the application. And as you, and the statute that criminalizes giving false information, it just says, any person who willfully provides false information on an application form under 692404 shall be guilty of a class 4 felony. It doesn't limit it to name, address, date of birth, country, citizenship, and so on.
Does there have to be, under your view of this statute, does there have to be some sort of relationship between the question that's being asked and the purpose for which the information is going to be used? For example, would a question like, what's the amount of your bank balance? Would that someone be prosecuted for misstating that, assuming it was in the form?
If that were, technically, I think that's probably correct. But as you look at the actual form itself, the questions, the little kind of laundry list that I think there's like a dozen of them, yes or no answers, all of them bear some relationship to the purpose of the form, which is determining whether or not this person is a suitable candidate for a gun permit.
Can the state ask a question like, member, are you a member of a militia group? Are you a member of Antifa?
I don't know, to be perfectly honest. I think that would, that's venturing into a little more iffy, I guess, territory. But the form that we have, as I understand it, is a uniform form that's done, that's pretty much in the same across the entire state, and that's also by statute. And I think the questions, and it's a relatively limited set of questions, basically getting general information about whether or not this person is, as I said, a suitable candidate for obtaining a gun permit. And I think as you look at the questions being directed toward that end, if you will, that an answer, a wrong or a false answer to any of those is suitable for a prosecution under the statute.
Is being subject to a prosecution but not being convicted for a felony offense a disqualifying characteristic for issuance of a gun permit?
Yes, and
under the, what statute?
Well, it's you have to kind of read the statutes, and as you the qualification, it's lifted basically directly out of federal statutes, 18 USC 922, and like in Nancy, it says a person under indictment or information in any court which a crime punishable by imprisonment for a term exceeding 1 year may be prosecuted. And that's the heading of that is basically the, it's under the general umbrella of persons who would be disqualified for the permit. And that kind of gets us into the complaint versus information issue.
Before you get to the complaint versus information issue, you were talking about the laundry list of questions on the standard form. And I understood you to suggest that all of them went to qualification. And yeah. I wanted to ask you about this question that says simply, quote, any restrictions by local ordinances, question mark, yes or no. What does that mean? And to which issue of qualification is that directed?
That one, I have to admit, that one kind of troubles me because it's awfully broad, but I am assuming what they're aiming at is if there is a local ordinance, and I would expect this is directed more towards, you know, Lincoln and Omaha and Grand Island's, you know, larger cities that would have more ordinances on hand about, you know, perhaps a violation of a city ordinance could be a disqualifier depending on how that particular ordinance was written. I'm assuming that's what that is directed at. It's pretty broad and pretty general. But that's the only way it makes any sense is to, is if you understand it to be directed at if there.
Isn't a major question here. A person who's going to be charged with a felony has to know they're going to be in violation of that felony.
Yes.
Not. So isn't there some problem with the gray area of this statute?
Well, I don't know that this is necessarily so much a gray area as it's one that is just going to require a little more knowledge of your local ordinances and whether or not there are any restrictions set up by particular city ordinance on the possession of purchasing or renting, leasing a handgun and the ability to possess one within the particular jurisdictional limits of whatever is covered by that ordinance. It imposes probably a little greater burden on the person to find out and understand what those ordinances are and whether or not they're affected by them. But I don't know that it's necessarily such a gray area that it's going to cause a problem with that.
How can you ever answer that question correctly? Any restrictions by local ordinance? Isn't every answer incorrect? Or can't it, isn't every answer potentially incorrect?
No, I don't think so. If you basically have an unblemished record, then there would be no disability for you to have any restrictions on by local ordinance. And the answer to that would be clearly, no, there are no restrictions. If you have had some issues, I don't know what local ordinances would restrict that. I hadn't really gone that in depth into it. But if there is if you've had issues with ordinances, violations of ordinances, it seems to me that you would be, it's the same as having a violation of the state statute. You're under an obligation to figure out how that affects you.
To what extent does the fact that this was charged as a criminal attempt affect your arguments today?
I don't think it affects it that much. Again, it's taking a substantial step toward the completion of. And I think they charged it that way because of the particular kind of strange facts of this. She answered it, the question in the negative, and then the next day called and said, gee, I think I might have messed that up. And the evidence appeared to be a little bit contradictory. Some of them said she wanted to withdraw her application, and another person testified that she wanted to basically change her answer on that. And I think that's... That was kind of the impression I got as to why it was charged as an attempt rather than a fully completed action.
You refer to the second subpart of the attempt, the statute. The first subpart intentionally engages in conduct which would constitute the crime if the attendant circumstances were as he or she believes them to be. How would that particular provision affect our analysis?
Well, obviously, I think it's strengthens the argument because she was obviously aware by virtue of the fact that she called and said, gee, I think I might have messed up on that answer because of the basically the pending charges in Clay County. So she was aware, and the district court found, and just she was charged in October with the felony offenses, and she made her application in, I think it was January 9th, I believe, of the following year. So she was aware that there were charges, pending out there against her. And I think the fact that she was aware of that and she basically made an attempt to backtrack and correct or withdraw her application indicates that she was falling within that second part of the attempt statute.
One thing that you haven't yet had the chance to address is whether this statement was false at all and why. And Mr. Island argues, well, at the time she gave the answer, there was a complaint, but there wasn't yet an information. So what's the state's argument as to why the statement was false?
It's the complaint versus information thing. The reason the statute reads there and the form reads the way it does is, again, they lifted the language directly out of the federal statute. And my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think the feds use complaints. But even in Nebraska, a complaint is just a complaint for a felony offense is really an information that hasn't grown up yet. By the way, we do our charging is you file your complaint in county court, or even if you file the information directly in district court, it's still treated as a complaint until you have your bind over. It is, I think what they're driving at is a felony offense. And if you, the question reads, are you under indictment or information in any court for a felony? And the fact that we call it a complaint rather than an information before it has basically reached its full-fledged state as an information ought not to disqualify or ought to disqualify a person from this, because what if you read it,
I understand why it might disqualify them for getting the firearm, but is the problem here with her answer or with the language of the form? I mean, if she wasn't under an information, was she? She was under a complaint.
At that point, yes, it was called a complaint at that juncture. But what she's
isn't doing, the importance of that, that there's been a probable cause determination either by the jury or by the complaint process?
Well, I don't know what the stage, I don't recall, or even if the record says what the stage of the complaint was by the time she made this application. But what essentially what her argument would do is set up a foot race. If you know that you've been charged with a felony, if you can hot foot it to the sheriff's office fast enough while it's still a complaint, you can get your application on file and you're in like Flynn.
Isn't the solution to avoid the foot race to change the form? It's not hard to change the form so that it asks, doesn't ask if you're under information or indictment, but asks if you are under a formal accusation of a charge. But that's not what the form says, and that's not the question that she answered.
That's true, but again, it says under information or indictment in any court and for a felony. And I think what it's driving at, that despite the somewhat inarticulate language that was used, is if you've been charged with a felony. And I don't dispute for a minute that it would be much better language to simply say, have you been charged with a felony in any court? And you know, that is
what was she, I mean, I guess I'll just ask like this: was she under indictment or information?
In the most technical sense, no, she was not. She had been charged with a complaint for a felony, but it hadn't matured yet into the information stage.
Can she answer in a technical sense, or does she have to read behind the question to see what the intent of the asking the question is in the first place?
I'm guessing to the average person, indictment, information, complaint are all basically fungible terms.
What if someone refers to
that? What your argument? Right? That's the state's argument.
Yeah, to the average person, an information, they know they've been charged with a felony offense. They don't know, they may not know exactly what it's called, but they know that they're facing a felony. And I think that's the intent of the form, and the intent of the statute is to preclude granting the application for someone who has been charged with a felony. And the language of, again, I can't dispute that it could be better written, but I think the way that it is written gets the point across, if you will, that if you have been charged with a felony, however you want to call it, then I think that you should be disqualified.
Is that a factual question for the trier of fact, or is that a question of matter of law?
I think it's really kind of a matter of law, whether what it is. I mean, the fact is,
in this situation, is it what the court did, the trial court did here when it made its decision? Did it make a factual finding, or did it make a decision?
I think it made a legal decision that basically the complaint is the essentially functional equivalent of an information for purposes of the statute. At least that's how I interpret it. I am way over my time. If there are no further questions, We would ask that the judgment be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 1 minute 50 seconds.
1 minute and 50 seconds, Mr. Island.
Your Honor, as you pointed out, indictment or information, especially used, I think, within the federal context, is that probable cause determination that's been made. When a complaint is filed, that hasn't been made yet. That's why we have a preliminary hearing. In this case, there was a complaint on file in October. In January, she makes the application. February, there's a bind over. February 9th, February 9th, is when the information is finally filed. And if we're guessing, and here we're talking between attorneys and we're talking about gray areas law, I cannot imagine what an ordinary citizen, and that's what I'm seeing in these cases, is that ordinary citizens are doing their best to interpret this, these questions, and sometimes they're wrong and they don't have the intent to do it, but all of a sudden they're facing a felony. And when it comes to a felony, I think we need to be a little more clear on what it is. I think the statute intends to know what is the disqualifying information. That's what we need to know.
What effect does it have our analysis this is an attempt?
I don't think it has any, because if the facts, I don't think there's a violation here under what we're arguing. We're saying as a matter of law, you only need the four things in 2404.
Okay, let's move past that one. Move to your second argument.
Right. And in the second argument, I still think that it's a matter of law, because if it's information or indictment, which requires a probable cause determination, that had not occurred at that time. That, once again, is a matter of law, not the issue of attempt. And so I don't think we need to go down that road of whether or not the attempt affects it. I think what we need to talk about is whether or not this qualifies as the disqualifying terms.
I beg your pardon, Justice Miller-Lerman here. Isn't the form to be answered by a normal person as a snapshot in time? Here today, are you under indictment? Here today, have you been charged with an information? Not what could happen next month.
Oh, definitely. It is at the time you answered. That is correct, Justice Miller-Lerman. And so how you answered that day, and on that day when she answered it, there had been no probable cause determination to give us an indictment or information.
I want to ask you about that argument, because let's assume an information charging a felony is filed directly in the district court.
Right.
And the application is filled out after the information is filed, but before either a waiver of preliminary hearing or a preliminary hearing occurs in the district court. What's the effect of that?
I think, once again, you're under the same thing under the Thomas and Carrera case. It's not an information until there's been that probable cause determination. And I think that's consistent with the idea of indictment or information is set out in the form.
Do we have to ignore the parenthetical definition on the form itself to find in your favor on the question of whether the answer was false?
I don't believe so. I think when they're talking about those terms and generally what they mean, they're still using the terms indictment information in those parentheticals. And once again,
well, they're using the terms to describe the terms for the lay person who's filling out the form. Fair?
They're trying to.
I mean, isn't that the purpose of the parenthetical?
Is to hopefully help them, but it's poorly done. It should have been, do you have a pending felony charge? That would be the easy way to do it, right? But if the disqualifying offense under federal law is an indictment or information, which means there's been the probable cause determination, is a complaint a disqualifying status under federal law? And it's not an issue I thought of until the court's questioning today. And I apologize for not addressing that in my brief.
Do you agree that the language of indictment or information is lifted directly out of the federal statute? Is that how we got the language here?
I would suspect that. I can't tell. I don't know what they were thinking, but I'm pretty sure you're probably right. Because that makes sense where they would get that. Once again, I don't think you need it, because the Deputy Brown makes clear, I need the name, date of birth, and I know everything I need to know whether or not she qualifies. All these extra questions are unnecessary, superfluous, and just lead to these kind of problems where people are like, and that's what happened in this case. She's like, I don't know if I answered that correctly. Did I answer that correctly? Can I withdraw it? Can I change it? Can I do something? Because I'm not sure if that's correct or not. And that's what's happened, is we're becoming a trap for unsophisticated. If we're having this complex discussion, I can't imagine what a normal citizen that goes in to try and fills this out and figures out where they're at, where they fall on this, much like as an ordinance. How am I going to know if an ordinance qualifies because does it meet the requirements for disqualification if it's a domestic violence but didn't provide me with all the protections that are required under the federal law in order to be a domestic violence crime for disqualification? It would take me a while to figure that out. I can't imagine an ordinary citizen's going to know that or not. Ask for the name, date of birth like they're required to. I think that's what the statute indicates. I think that's what they make clear with the state patrol requirements. Give them the information they need to make this determination.
And what do they do with all the white space on letter size form?
Just leave it blank. You know, then no one has any of these problems. We get it taken care of properly. That's what the $5 is for. Let them run the background check. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments in State versus Hoffman. And we will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Johnson.